Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio, and I am your host, Sheena Metal. Every week on the show, I feature a guest that I adore, who is somebody that not only is amazing at the thing that they do or the things that they do, but underlying that is always thinking about the world, about humanity, about all the creatures, great and small, of the earth, and how to make the world a better place. And certainly my guest today is no exception to that. She's a wonderfully talented actress and producer and more, but every time I interview her, I'm always struck by her humanity and her positive attitude and the way that she's very concerned with the world in general and with what she can do to put a smile on someone's face, to show some kindness, to make the world better, to lighten someone's load. The wonderful Dawn Wells is here. Hello, my friend. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, thank you. What wonderful accolades you're saying. But you know, if we all just helped one or two people, if everybody just put their hand out to one or two people, we'd all be in good shape. Right now, what's going on with this water? Didn't we go through enough in New Orleans? And now it's all up and down Florida.
It's just awful. Houston, and just 2 weeks later, now it's going to be Florida.
Yeah,
just a couple of weeks. I mean, they've just gotten Houston dry out, and they say this one's going to be bigger.
Yep.
So it's
the worst ever in the Atlantic, they say.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's the longest that it stayed this ferocious. This long. Because normally they're horrible. They start out in the middle of nowhere, and by the time they get near some kind of land, they've calmed down. But this one has gone something like 275 miles.
It's just picking up steam all
the time. And the water's just getting hotter and hotter and hotter.
Yep.
Which may, the water all over that part of the Atlantic now is 90 degrees in the
ocean. Oh, my gosh.
Can you believe that?
What does it do to the fish life, too?
I think right now the fish are just hanging on to some coral, trying not to
they're down at the bottom of the
ocean. Exactly,
golly.
Not to fly away. But you know, you have been so busy, and it's such a joy to have you here. But you were on my original list of names that I jotted down when I started this show in January for people I wanted to have on the show. And you've been so busy; it's taken this long.
I know,
to get
but
you
I'm
here.
So glad to be here.
I'm so glad
I love
to
what
have you,
you
there.
Do, and I Thank love you. The fact that you're putting it out there, and we're doing the best we can. And I don't know. I think women in radio are, what do I want to say, a godsend.
I like that.
Because I think you cover everything.
Well, I think this year we've learned more than maybe we ever knew how important it is for women to start to stand up and stop allowing ourselves to be treated like less than.
And it doesn't have to be made a point.
No, it just has to be. We just have to take our own power, each one of us, and just be. I mean, we don't, I'm not a fan of that certain kind of, ultra feminism that where women believe they're superior to men or we need to take everything over.
I'll show you kind of thing.
I don't believe that. Yeah. I believe that what we should be striving towards is a global human equality where the idea of gender or ethnicity or religion or whether you're able-bodied or differently able just no longer comes into play.
It means nothing.
It's just not an issue anymore.
And I grew up with a mother. My parents were divorced, and I grew up living with, my mother and father were good friends. But I grew up with a single mother with me who worked. So she worked. Can you hear me now? Hello. She worked, but she took a job. She said, I have to be home at 3:30 because she gets off of school. She was a brownie leader, so she knew all my friends. I didn't have the dad at home that kind of knew where I was all the time. My mother knew where I was. I mean, I have some funny stories if we have time for it today.
Sure.
But, you know, there's nothing wrong with keeping an eye on your kids. There's nothing wrong with...
No.
We're all here together, and the more we do together and the more we are as a unit, the better off we all are. And I mean, my mother was really very funny. I have two really cute stories to tell you. The first one was, I'm driving between my junior and senior year in college.
Okay.
Now I'm, what, 21?
Right.
I went to Stevens College, all women in Missouri, the first 2 years. Third year, I was at the University of Washington.
Okay.
My college sweetheart was the All-American quarterback. He was from Pomona. I was from Reno. And he wanted to pick me up between my junior and senior year in college in Reno and drive me to Seattle. My mother went, I don't know. That's 10 hours in a car with a boy. I'm not sure. But she let me.
Wow.
Somewhere in Oregon, the highway patrol pulls us over in the middle of the highway. And I said, Al, were you speeding? He said, I don't think so. Rolls down the window, and the policeman said, is there a Dawn Wells in the car? Call your mother. In the middle of nowhere in Oregon. Now, that's all right. I was 20, 21 maybe. My favorite story is I was 55, in the Solomon Islands with all my college chums, where no white women have ever been before, canoeing up the island, no running water, no electricity, been there 6 weeks. My mother was house-sitting for me here in L.A. I took this little puddle jumper into Sydney to the airport, and I'm walking in the airport on the way to my gate, and a pilot passes me, and he said, "Aren't you Marianne from Gilligan's Island?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Your mother's been looking for you all day." Now, wow. Excuse me, who is she calling? The tower? I mean, I don't stop and think about that.
That's fantastic.
Yes. So, don't worry. It's okay.
You know, it's interesting because I was, I have my very best friend who's like my sister, because I don't have any biological family since my mom passed. And she has a little girl that she and her husband adopted who's going to be 9 in November, whose birthday is very, very close to my mother. So, and we laugh that I had a Scorpio mother that was adopted, and she has a Scorpio daughter that's adopted.
Wow.
So I said something the other day, like, we were talking about cell phones, and I asked her how old until my niece gets her cell phone. And she said, well, you know, so she asked her, when do you want a cell phone? And she was so cute. She said, I want it for my sweet 16. And I laughed and I said, you know, that's going to change, right? She's gonna get to be 10, 11. It's not going to be 16 anymore. So I said, when I was a kid, I think my mom would have given me a cell phone at the age that I started spending the night at people's houses. And she said, "Oh, we don't really do that anymore. People don't kids don't spend the night at other kids' houses anymore because it's just all the stories about how it's not safe and you don't want your child to be somewhere without you." So I started thinking about my mom, who, like yours, Dawn, was so invested in me and always wanted to know where I was. And even in high school, I had a great late curfew. It was, you can go and do whatever you want, but you call me every couple hours and let me know where you are
exactly.
And that you're okay.
Yes.
So it reminded me of a story to tell her that when I was older, when I was, you know, maybe like in my 30s, I asked my mom, because she started confessing to me how panicked she was when I was little, every time I was out of the house. And I said, how did you let me go off and spend the night at people's houses and go to camp? And what in the world? And she said, you know what, honey? I knew I had to let you go, and I knew I had to let you do it. She's like, but I paced a lot, and I prayed a lot, and I just constantly prayed that you would walk through that door and be okay. I think we don't realize sometimes what moms go through.
Yes, that's true. And I went away to camp, sixth grade, maybe seventh grade, and I was an only child. My mother knew where I was.
And I was an only child, too. Right.
Yeah,
too.
So I was excited to go to camp, and this was kind of fun because I didn't have sisters. Three of the girls got so homesick, cried. The parents came up and got them, so my mother came up and got me. And I said, what are you getting me for? She said, because everybody wants to go home. I said, I don't want to go home. But she thought I would be heartbroken, and I wasn't.
Yeah.
But I think... I don't mean my mother didn't want me around. I don't mean that. But I think it didn't hurt me at all to be that protected. I knew I was loved, and I knew if there was something wrong, she'd be there.
And I felt that protected until the day she died. And I have to tell you, as soon as she died, I started to feel protected in a different way. And I still feel completely protected by her.
It's how you were raised is what it is.
I think that there's nothing wrong with feeling like somebody has your back. I think it's an essential thing that every human being needs.
And if you're a family of 5 or 6 brothers and sisters, there's 1 or 2 of you that are close that way. And I didn't have that.
Right, but if you're an only child, and my dad wasn't ever around at all. My parents were married, but kind of estranged, and he worked all the time, so we almost never saw him.
Yep.
And so it was just the two of us. I don't know how she did it.
Did you argue?
Very rarely.
No, I fought all the time. I don't mean fought.
With your mom?
Yeah.
I can think of 3...
But I would never have disobeyed her. I never would have run outdoors or run away or not come home on time. I argued about it.
I can think of 3 times in my life that we argued. And a lot of it surrounded the fact that she had had a horrible childhood. She had been orphaned and then adopted. But both her birth family and her adopted family, they were not people who were close, so she never felt taken care of. And I was her whole thing.
Yes.
And so I think as I got older, and especially as I started getting involved with people in relationships, she felt like I was going to leave her.
My mother the same way.
It made her very sad.
Yes.
Because
all she had was you.
Right. I was all she had. And it took me a while to really realize that and to understand that and be okay with that. And then when she was sick and I took care of her, I always wanted her to know when she was older that she was my priority no matter what.
Uh-huh.
And she was, and she still is. You know, the I Am Raising the Vibration.com movement that this show was born out of, I founded it on her birthday last year, which was her first birthday, not on the earth.
What was the day?
November 9th, 2016.
Okay.
We elected a new president that day. And it was a crazy day in our country, I think, for a lot of people and a lot of divisiveness, and I had been wanting for months to, mom died in March, so I had been wanting between March and November to do something in her honor, to just sort of pass on her teachings and all the things I talk about on my radio shows.
She was your influence then.
Oh my God, she was my everything.
Okay.
She was amazing. And an amazing amount of wisdom. She was a brilliant teacher. She was a therapist. She was a wonderful psychic medium, but she stopped working because she wanted to devote her time to me.
Yes.
So, and she didn't like crowds. So you kind of got her. When people came to my house to spend the night, they got her wisdom.
How fabulous.
And they went home better.
Yes.
But she didn't really have it in her to sit in front of a microphone or stand up in front of a crowd, although she would have been brilliant if she had.
God, if you two could have done this together.
I know. So wow. I feel like she passed everything to me, so for me to do it. And when she died, I feel like a lot of her spiritual stuff just downloaded into me instantly when she died. I mean, really, I felt it download into me when she died. And I realized that I was here to, for the first half of my life, because she died 2 weeks shy of my 49th birthday, the first half of my life to soak up her teachings, and the second half of my life to use those teachings to share with the world. And that's why I started the movement.
It's fabulous.
So she's always with me.
Yes, she is.
And it's a wonderful way to go through the grieving process of not having her here on the earth, knowing that she's always with me in spirit, and to be able to share Dawn little pieces of her with everybody keeps her here. It's kind of a wonderful way. I think when people die, if we spent less time worrying about the fact they weren't here anymore and bemoaning that, and more time celebrating the wonderment of when they were here.
And what you've learned and what you've shared and what she's given you.
And what you have to pass on because of them.
And what you really remember. And I didn't even live with my father, and I can still hear him saying, "Ah, you can do that." "Daddy, I'm not so sure." "Ah, you can do that."
That's my first ever raising the vibration spit take. Just, you know, that's fantastic. But that's important, right? A kid needs to hear that you can do anything.
"Ah, you can do that."
Now, where did you, because obviously you're a very intelligent person, and I had you on the air for
10 obviously.
Minutes.
How'd we figure that out?
Well, people have already figured that out because you've been on the air now for 10 minutes and they've heard you speak. But, you know, when did you know as an actor and as a woman who grew up very beautiful, when it was okay to just say what you thought and have an opinion?
Well, see, none of what you've just said has ever registered in my mind.
I'd love that.
Because I grew up plump. I grew up not having brothers and sisters and all of that family.
Right.
My parents were divorced. My father lived in Las Vegas, adopted two children when I was 13. So I never lived with them, but they were like little dolls I played with.
Okay.
My mother and father were good friends. Mother and stepmother were good friends. My father had a lot of money. My mother worked very hard, worked for 5 pediatricians. So I had both sides of the fence.
Sure.
All the time. And I was raised with, I didn't have to work. I wanted to do things. I was Girl Scout. She was a brownie leader.
Right. My mom was my brownie leader, too, by the way.
Yeah. And all the kids spent the nights at my house and everything.
Yep, sure. Uh-huh.
All of that kind of stuff. So she was really a mom. I should have had brothers and sisters, but there was no television when I was growing up. We were outside playing baseball.
Sure.
Or hide and seek or something. You weren't sitting in front of a machine. And I wanted to go away from home. I wanted to go away to college. And I was accepted a lot of places, and Stevens College came about the last 3 weeks, and they said, "That's in Missouri, and that's all girls." I said, "I'm going."
Really? Why did you want to go to an all-girls school?
Because I wanted sisters.
Okay.
You know, I wanted somebody to kind of share something with. Boys, I didn't quite understand. I'm not athletic because my knees dislocate, so I never played baseball in the streets and stuff like that.
I think we talked about this, too, that my mom's knees dislocated. Very
really?
Young. Yeah, so she threw them out the first time when she was 26. Bad enough that they put her in a full body cast for 6 months.
For her leg?
Because both of her knees went out at the same time.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so she like the middle of her, like her waist down, she had a body cast
Lord.
For six. And then they told her, like they did back then, don't ever do anything again, now you've learned is the worst thing that they can tell
well,
you.
Well, now they do a knee replacement. They would have done that right then. I was doing a rangete in a ballet class and landed on my face.
Okay.
And it was just one knee after the other. And then I was cheerleading or something in the 7th grade, and it went out, and I had my girlfriend kicked it back in place.
Oh, my goodness.
Now when you realize it, you know, all that kind of stuff.
So did you like going to a private girls' school?
Well, I was accepted to Stanford, which was a big deal at my age bracket, and for a woman. And mm-hmm. and I liked that. And I was accepted to Mills, which was all women too, both real close to home.
Yeah.
Stevens College was in Missouri.
Okay.
You couldn't get any further away than Mama. So I was accepted, and I was kind of excited about it. We took the train I went to San Francisco, and the train went, the Stephen Special picked up girls in Los Angeles all the way across 4 days before we landed in Columbia, Missouri.
Wow.
So the whole train was full of your prospective
sophomores. Oh, that's fantastic.
Fabulous. You made friends
that's
on the
fantastic.
Way.
That's fantastic.
So it was really wonderful for me, like sisters. And then when I graduated, I was chemistry major.
Okay.
I like psychology.
Okay.
But I couldn't take PE, so I took a theater course. I went, oh, this is kind of fun. And my professor said, you're good at this. I went, pfft. Yeah, and I didn't have any
right.
aspirations of doing
what were
that.
You going to do with chemistry?
I don't know. I liked science, so I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know what I would have done. In the lab, probably.
Hmm.
I don't know. I liked all that. It's black and white. You either get it or you don't get it. Psychology went, oh, it's just too esoteric.
Right.
Are we on the right path or aren't we?
But do you like it now? Because you use it as an actor, right? And you use it every day. I mean, to me, I hope that's something they never take out of curriculums. And I think it should be in a high school curriculum.
What?
Psychology. Because you need it every day because you're constantly dealing with people and their various isms and strangeness.
That should be part of the English language.
I agree.
You know, your ABCs in a psychology course.
I agree.
I mean, and I think you, if you're intelligent or open, I think you kind of get it and use it. If you're not and you're abused or dominated or ignored,
right.
You don't know what to step up to the plate with. Maybe you do it by being angry or fighting back or retreating or going into, you know. I fought with my mother. I mean, my mother and I had arguments, really arguments, and there was no physical anything. But I talked back to her. I never got slapped in the face or anything.
You think it's just because she was too protective?
Oh, yeah.
So you rebelled against the protection?
Oh, yeah. But I never ran out the door. I never didn't come home when she told me.
Right.
I didn't rebel that way. I just argued with it all the time. And my friends and I would say, your mother was really tough. I said, yes, she was. Didn't hurt me a bit. Didn't hurt me a bit.
Yeah.
Didn't hurt me a bit. Of course, I don't know what kind of a mother I would have been. But I think, don't you learn every 5 years something different?
Oh God!
I don't think I can say last year I learned this. But as you mature, and now I'm, you know, going towards the end of my life, I keep thinking I got 50 years left. But having no children, so I don't see times going by.
Right. I don't have kids either.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I'm not a grandma. Nobody's crawling in my lap and calling me grandma. So I'm still out there talking to the 13-year-olds. Behave yourself! Don't you know what you're doing?
Well, but me too. I think the entertainment business keeps us young because we're constantly meeting young people.
Or else it makes you think, oh my God.
Well, but I mean, you do a play.
I've aged. Oh,
so,
my Lord.
So I'm 50, and if I do a play with somebody who's 80 and somebody who's 20, during the course of that play, we're all the same age.
Exactly. Exactly.
So age doesn't feel the same to us, whereas I have friends who I went to high school with who had kids right away, got married right away, have a real job, are thinking about retiring when they're 65, and for them, ages are milestones. But for us, age is just, hopefully, it means every few years you amass more wisdom.
Well,
that's all age
and that's the whole. With me, it's what part can I play now?
Oh, well, that's
sure. I can't sing and dance and playing our song anymore.
Right.
But I'm really, I'm old enough, but I'm not really the granny. I can't do Irene Ryan either yet. So that's your business. I mean, as an artist, you may grow, but nobody knows how old you are when you're painting.
Although I think there are probably women younger than you playing grannies because they just have an older
and it isn't age
to them.
Yeah, it isn't age, but Meryl Streep is one. Meryl Streep can play anything. You don't know whether she's 20 or 50 or 70.
Right, but if they dress her up to be old, they dress her up. As you see Meryl Streep walking down the street, she doesn't look like somebody who would be a grandmother.
No.
But there are people who, you know, it's funny because I just turned 50 this year. My best friend's 53. We were a freshman and a senior in high school when we met. And every once in a while, she'll call me up and say, you know, turn on this commercial. She'll send me the YouTube, like, this woman's 51 and she's talking about being a grandmother and my daughter's 8. And do I look like that?
You see? Exactly.
But I think our life experience, because of this industry, I think there's something about doing what you love and getting to play in the arts every day. It keeps you looking young. I think LA keeps you looking young with the weather. And I also think that we are young in spirit, and that makes you look young.
Well, and I think that's true. There's a double-edged sword. Of course, I'm a Libra and have to take both sides. Yes, but there's such an issue with age here. There's such an issue with how does she look.
Absolutely.
There's such an issue of can she play that part. That's one of it. The other one is there's a spirit in you that says, I can do that. Well, I don't look in the mirror and go, oh, my God. Well, I do sometimes.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
I do occasionally.
But you can
forget.
But you can only do so much.
Yeah.
So grow with grace.
Yeah.
Age with grace. And yet, I'm not a mother or a grandmother. And if I had a 17-year-old grandson on drugs who's driving his alcohol and knocks somebody up, there'd be angst inside of me. There'd be sorrow inside of me, and I don't have that.
Yeah.
And that ages you, if nothing else does.
It's true. And that's one thing about not having a family, right, is that there's less angst. There's less deaths. There's less seeing mm-hmm. people suffering. Mm-hmm. You kind of, for me, it's made me a lot more of a citizen of the world. I feel more of the world's vibration because I don't have an immediate biological family that I feel all of their vibrations.
You're right.
Because I was, was at my best friend's birthday party last weekend, and seeing like all of her cousins, because she has a whole crop of cousins about the same age, and they do this thing where four times a year the whole family gets together and celebrates the birthdays from that quarter, and they all have kids, and it's a whole kind of a different thing to rely on. And she called me the other day. That's because she said, I'm home a lot with my daughter, and she's this. I don't even know if I should tell the story there, but my niece is extremely creative. She made a sister out of like paper towel rolls and toilet paper rolls and dressed her up, put clothes on her. She said, "Oh my God, I'm the worst mother in the world because my child has made a companion because she wants a sister." And I said, "Don't you remember that being little? All I thought about was having a sister."
Me too.
And she said, "No, because I have four or five cousins the same age. We always lived in the same place. There were 10 or 12 kids on my street that were the same age.
See, that's
we played outside all the time." And I said, I didn't have any of that. And let me tell you, if you don't have that, being an only child is lonely. So I understand why she's lonely. Because I was as a kid too.
And that's why my mother was a brownie leader and stuff. I think
mine
she
too.
Was aware of it, trying to get the kids around me.
And mine got me into music. She sent me to a guitar class when I was four. And we were always moving because my dad was always getting transferred throughout the corporation as they needed him places.
Uh-huh.
So we went to a different state.
And you don't learn to share.
No.
You don't. It's my toy. I'm taking my toy and go home. Your brother and sister, you have to see him at breakfast. You may have taken his baseball, but you still have to have breakfast with him the next morning. It's interesting, and I think we all are a product of everything.
I agree.
You used to be whipped. Families had belted, and they used to spank the kids. That doesn't happen anymore. I mean, I have a friend that's interesting about keeping your eyes up wide open. Some friends of mine in Columbia, Missouri, and they're very successful, and they have six children, and they were building a new home. And she said, "I want you to see the house." Well, the second floor is all the kids.
Oh.
No doors except the bathroom.
Oh, wow.
No doors. You can walk right by and see that Johnny's studying or Susie's on the phone or whatever.
Interesting.
Now, that's very interesting. And the kids aren't fighting it because they've grown up that way.
But don't you think kids need some privacy?
Well, there's privacy if you want to. You can go in the bathroom or you can go, I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
But as an only child, don't you like at night to be able to come back to your house and close the door?
Oh, yeah.
Don't you like to, you're happy to go out and be at the fan convention or on the set or in the theater or wherever you are, but at the end of that, to come home and be able to close the door and be in your space, that's your renewal place, right? It is for me.
It is, and I am very aware now that I have, I'd say maybe in the last 8 or 9 years, I thought, I wish I were still married, or I wish I did have a family that the grandkids had come over, and I'd say in the last 6 or 8 months, I thought, the decisions are mine. Nobody's telling me what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, just because you have a husband and children doesn't mean you all get along. Doesn't mean you still want the same things.
Yeah.
If you've lived with somebody 20 years and all of a sudden he's an alcoholic or all of a sudden the kids are, whatever. There's always problems. Nothing's perfect.
No.
I'm never really lonesome.
No, I'm not either.
I'm never really lonesome.
I'm not either. No, and I think that's a thing you learn as an only child. You get over it when you're a kid.
That's right.
You get used to it.
I'll read a book, or I'll go for a walk, or I'll watch television.
I talk to my cat.
Exactly.
I turn on the TV, and I talk to my cat.
I didn't have television growing up. No, remember listening to the radio, but television does take you away.
Oh, it's a wonderful babysitter.
It is.
I turn it on when I work, because I have a lot of stuff I have to do on the computer for the shows and for the vibration movement, and I turn something on, like either a show I'm binging through or the news, and I just let it run, and it kind of babysits me while I work. It keeps me focused.
It's company.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It really is. But mm-hmm. my mom was that way. Because we always moved, so she couldn't get her teaching license, and she couldn't make friends. We were always in a new place. The TV and that became kind of her entertainment. It was, she liked escapism because the world was for her
too tough.
I think because she was so empathic and so smart and so psychic, the world was a lot for her. So she liked to, you know, escape in an American in Paris or...
My mother was a reader. She did it by reading because there was no television.
I remember waking up in the middle of the night sometimes and seeing a light on and crawling down the stairs. It was 4 a.m. and my mom was in her chair with a book.
Reading.
Reading and reading and reading. I mean, just book after book after book after book.
I'm a reader, too. Well, I don't know that it's... I'm not a music person. I mean, I like music to move in. I love rock and roll. I love that. An opera would just... I'd just go right out of the room because I don't know whether you're... flat or sharp or whatever. I don't really hear it. Rhythm, I do. But music in the background, unless I'm really listening to it, I'd much rather have the news. I've got CNN going on all day long.
See, if I have music in the background, then I want to do something creative. I want to write something creative. I clean, I organize, but I can't stay focused just in doing the day-to-day office tasks that you have to do so much of in the computer. But if I have the TV running in the background,
I can.
It helps me focus.
Yeah. My manager has music going all the time and at full blast. I said, doesn't that just drive you crazy? No, I guess you don't hear it. Or he's musical. I mean, I don't know if you're on or off key. So, you know, I like movement. I like dance, but I can't carry it too
much. Maybe for him, the music is what babysits him. Maybe that's what keeps
him
moving.
Well, and he comes from his grandfather was wrote Lily Marlene.
Okay.
So he comes from real high class music, not just rock and roll.
Yeah.
So that's in his soul. You know?
Yeah. And my mom always had music playing in the house while she cleaned. I mean,
my mother didn't.
She put country music on, and she cleaned the house in her underwear. That was it.
My mother cleaned her house in her underwear, too.
My mom was not a kooky person, but she loved to put country music on and dance while she cleaned the house in her underwear.
Oh, see, I'd love that. Not country music, but I'd love that.
She was from Kentucky originally. So.
Well, and my mother was so funny when you stop and think about it. My mother, we had a little two-bedroom house, and there were two bedrooms like this, and then the bathroom was over here, and she would walk from her bedroom to the bathroom covering herself.
Oh.
Just me and my mother in the house. I was 9, 10 years old. And I think that
was a generational thing?
Probably so.
Okay.
Probably so.
Just a strange
but
thing.
But when I think about it, you wouldn't do that with a husband. I guess you would with brothers, maybe. I don't know because I didn't live with
him. My mom and I didn't because it was just her and me. My dad was never home. And even when he was holed off in a room somewhere by himself. And so it was like he was never there. And so we would just kind of wander around, you know, whatever.
Well, maybe. And my father and stepmother were married when I was 10 or something. And I saw sexuality. And I saw...
Oh.
My stepmother was gorgeous. Yeah. And I saw the pretty negligees. And I saw her rubbing his feet. And I saw her cooking his favorite food and all that. Now, not very often because I didn't live with him. But when I went, it was a great education for me.
Yeah.
And my mother and stepmother were good friends. So there was never animosity. It was long after they divorced that they married. Betty and my father married. So I saw that sensuality that I think I probably would have been an old maid or frigid or something.
Right.
My mother never dated.
My mom didn't. Well, my mom obviously stayed married the whole time, but there was nothing. There was nothing intimate about my parents' marriage.
My mother
at all.
Never went out with anybody, so I never saw that at all.
I think my mom in another life might have been like a nun or something. And she was very focused on the spiritual. Although she did read a lot of like Sidney Sheldon and John Jake series,
the racy stuff.
She liked racy books, but I think maybe she liked the actual the creativity and the drama of romance in that way
stepping
presented
back and
like that
it.
Then she actually wanted to be involved in it herself.
I don't remember. I think my mother made up her mind that she was not going to have men in the house with me around. And then my father and mother were good friends, and my stepmother and my mother were good friends.
That's awesome.
But we lived in two different towns. My mother lived in Reno, was a bookkeeper. My father lived in Las Vegas, so that was two different towns. So I got to see both sides, and both of them were good cooks and good housekeepers and all of that. And then my mother and father, my stepmother and father adopted two children. And my father and I was doing the television series, second year. My stepmother called me. She said, well, I'm sending the children to you. I said, I beg your pardon? She said, your father and I are getting a divorce, and I'm sending them to you. They'll be there tomorrow morning at 12 o'clock. I said, excuse me.
How old were they?
Fifth and sixth grade.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm in the middle of a television series.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was only married about a year and a half. And my mother had moved to Los Angeles then. She was a bookkeeper for 5 pediatricians, and she went to her first interview, and he said, you're not young and blonde. I wouldn't hire you.
Oh.
I went, oh, Mom, why didn't you call somebody? You'd have had the building. But anyway, that is an
But even back then? Maybe back then nobody would have cared. They would have said, yeah, you're not young and blonde.
I don't know if you could sue it at that point. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
My stepmother and mother were good friends. So my mother would pick the kids up after school. I woke up one day and I was doing the series, and my sister walked in. She found the studio from her school in the fifth grade. So that was kind of a big responsibility while I was working. But my mother really helped me out. She picked him up from school. And
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, are you still close with your siblings?
Yeah, my brother's passed away.
I'm so sorry.
My sister's had four kids. She's getting married for the third time. I'm not real close to her. She's just kind of, not that she's wild, she's just off in another world, kind of. She's in Moab, Utah now, I think.
Okay.
She's a good girl.
Did you get a lot of the attitudes, the great attitudes that you have about the world and giving back and being positive? Did that all come from your mom, do you think?
Well, it's very interesting because my mother was very open and kind and loving to everybody, but very, very critical of me.
Oh.
Not critical of me, but...
That's a shame.
Well, is it? I had the manners. I learned what to eat and what not to eat.
Yeah.
It didn't hurt me to come home on time. I didn't try to run away and sneak out and in the back seat of a car with somebody. I couldn't get away with it.
Sure.
I couldn't have gotten out. I don't know with a father what that would have been, whether it would have been an argument between the two of them, let her go or no, let her go. I don't know. To the fact that I was telling you about when here I was, 60 years old, and that your mother's been looking for you all day. It didn't hurt me. It really didn't hurt me. I grew up a good girl. I got away with what I could get away with.
Do you think she was doing it to be critical, or do you think she was doing it
protective,
just
protective? She was. I was in charge. She was in charge of me. My dad was in another state, and she had to be the mother and the father. And just about everybody had mothers and fathers.
Because my mom did all those same things, but it never occurred to me that she was being critical. I guess I just thought that was that's what a mother did. They passed all that knowledge on to you, and you sucked it up.
Well, yeah, I'm not critical. I mean, she was never mean.
But then my mother's mother had four, because she adopted four, two boys and two girls.
Ooh.
And she, too, was this big child psychologist and a big community icon, kind of a famous child psychologist for her time. So everybody went to her with their problems.
Wow.
But she was very critical of my mother. Not so much of the others, I don't think. Although maybe they all thought she was too, and my mom just thought she wasn't as hard on them as she was on
Maybe she expected more of your mother.
I don't know. I don't know what it was. Sometimes maybe you don't click with somebody just because you adopt them doesn't mean you necessarily click.
Absolutely.
My mother had spent a lot of time rebelling, I think, against my grandmother, and she didn't want me to rebel against her.
Yes.
So she laid it all out to me in a much different way. So I was always given all that stuff, but it was always done in this kind of very practical way. Like, I remember once, and I talk about this on my shows here at LA Talk Radio all the time. I remember once I was maybe 9 or 10 years old, and I don't know where we were going. We had already moved to Baltimore, so I had to be more than 9. And all of a sudden, she pulled the car over to the side of the road. I don't know what we were talking about. And she said, She said, I'm not telling you should never drink. I'm not going to tell you shouldn't smoke cigarettes. She's like, I did all of both of those things a lot when I was young. She said, I don't know about drugs. That's more your generation's things than mine. She said, in my day, only drummers did drugs. She said, but I imagine you will probably experiment with all those things, and I'm never going to tell you not to do any of that. I will tell you that what I want is for you just never to not tell me. So whatever you do, just tell me. She's like, if you get pregnant, we'll deal with it. Just don't run away and don't not tell me. So I grew up kind of thinking,
that's fabulous.
Okay, though. So it's everything's going to be okay if I screw up and do something, as long as I let her know the only bad thing is to keep things from her. So I never kept anything from her. She knew about everything. I remember coming to talk to her the day after I lost my virginity at almost 21 because I didn't feel like I had to rebel. So I just waited till the right person came along.
Exactly, exactly.
And she remember her saying, I don't know that I need all the details, honey. And I was like, well, you told me.
You told me to tell you.
Tell you stuff. So here we go. So I just told her everything. And because of that, I never drank, I never touched a drink, I never touched a cigarette, I never touched a drug, I never touched a cup of coffee.
Desire to.
Yeah, and all these things that kids were in such a hurry to do to prove to their parents, well, you said I couldn't do that, so you said I wasn't old enough for coffee, so I'm going to sneak out and drink coffee. I didn't do any of it.
I found that more of it was what the rest of the kids were doing.
Mm-hmm.
It was more that,
I didn't care.
Well, he can stay out till 10 o'clock. Why can't I?
I didn't care because I always felt like, and I remember her saying to me once when a lot of the kids that in Maryland, we lived in a very rural place and a lot of the kids were very tough, kind of mountain kids. And I remember her saying, look, here's the thing. If you're going to start drinking, I have one request. The first time you get drunk, do it here. because I don't want you to be at somebody's house at a party, get drunk, and feel weird and not know what's going on and freak out. Because that's what I did when I was a kid. She said, so you tell me what you want. We'll buy the stuff.
We'll
make the drinks. We'll try everything you want. You'll see what it's like to get drunk, and then you can do whatever you want.
Did you do that?
No. So I always figured someday Mom and I were going to have this drunk party. And I didn't want to do it with anybody else because it seemed like it was going to be so much fun to do it with her.
How great.
And then when I was 15, I started acting, and my acting coach in high school was very much into this whole your body is your temple and mind, body, spirit kind of thing, which was a very interesting outlook for an ex-football player of the Depression era to have. But he was kind of this big guy that looked like Vic Tayback, but he had this very your body is your temple thing. And I thought, well, I can't abuse my body with drugs and alcohol because I'm an actor and it'll affect my performances.
That's right.
And then cut to, I was in a casino in Vegas, and I was almost 24. I was working for a theater chain, and they had sent me there because I was doing their corporation newsletter. And one of the other managers who was at the Show West convention said, can I get you a drink? Wait a minute, do you drink? And I honestly thought, do I drink? And I thought, well, I'm 24. Who starts at 24? So I just never started.
Yeah. You never started?
And I just never started.
Did you ever taste it?
Nope, never had a drink.
Oh, for Pete's sake, not a champagne
I smell other people's. Nope, I never got married.
Well, I mean, somebody else's wedding, I'll take it. Isn't that funny?
I toast with water or whatever. And now so many people on my friends, probably yours too, are on the wagon. There's a lot of Martinellis these days.
Well, and the thing is, I grew up in Las Vegas. I mean, you know, my father had the Thunderbird Hotel, and people were drinking all the time. My father and stepmother might have a cocktail, but I never saw that. My mother would have a Bacardi maybe once in a while. And I was not... I like the celebration of holding the glass.
Sure.
I like to hold the martini glass or the champagne glass because it looks so elegant. And I'm not a great coffee drinker particularly. But you need to know how much you should drink and how much you shouldn't. You know, and I also am always on a diet, and I'm always have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So you don't want to have all those excess calories and bags under your eyes.
Yeah,
I'm getting to the point now that I'm thinking, you know what, Don, you're at the last lap. How important is it that you look good tomorrow morning? How important is it? It's not like it was 30 years ago.
You look amazing. I mean, you look amazing. You look happy. You look healthy.
Well, knock wood, I'm
healthy.
You've
got good genes.
I've got good genes.
You've taken good care of yourself. You have good happiness from the inside that radiates out.
I think it's more that than anything, because I don't really exercise a lot. I'm kind of disciplined with my food, but not really. I'm always trying to be on a diet. But I've had terrible, terrible skin, terrible complexion. That taught me a lot of discipline. I mean, while all my friends could go out and play softball in the afternoon, I would have to hot pack my face, put it over a pot on the stove for 40 minutes that kind of stuff, and go to the dermatologist, or I would have had those deep scars. And my mother was very aware of that. Thank God. I wouldn't have known.
Thank God Mom was always watching. Watching for acne.
So there was that discipline that went there.
But your skin's held up really well.
It has.
I mean, I think that you see the difference in how you looked when you were 25, but I think a lot of people, when they look at you, and I will say I'm one of those people, we don't really do the math. So I looked up how old you were once, and I had absolutely no idea.
Point is, now you can't lie.
I know.
You know, years ago,
but
Natalie,
why would you want to?
Well, Mrs. Howell never told her age. I said, Natalie, how did you get a passport? How do you come on? You can't not go across the world and not say how old you are on your birth certificate.
Yeah. Even up to, like, I worked for somebody 20, 25 years ago. They had a driver's license, but they had gotten a fake birth certificate, and it was not there.
I'm sure Natalie did, too, with her passport stuff.
But you could do that back then.
Yeah, she died at
somebody
91.
Would write,
went, 91?
Yeah. Oh. Mm-hmm. How old did you think she was?
I don't know. Well, she must have been 65 when she was doing the show then. I don't know. But she always lied about it. Nowadays, you can't. But and I'm not obsessed. I've always taken care of my complexion. I don't mean creams and all that, because I couldn't go to sleep with makeup on because of the acne.
Right.
But I still don't use moisturizer. I still get a suntan if I can. I still have a lot of oil in my skin. There's other issues. I gain weight. You know, all of those other things that happen. So no one's perfect. As you grow older, there's always something that you got
to
work on.
You get to a certain point in your life.
Yes.
And I think being 50 is when you start to think about that turn. That's the first turn, right?
Yes.
You start to think, well, what is the rest of my life going to be like? And do I really need to be chasing this craziness?
Exactly.
And now, luckily for me, two things. One, I've never been the kind of girl that anybody was going to put in a magazine anyhow, so that's taken pressure off of me. It's hurt my career in some ways. It's helped my life in other ways.
I understand.
The second thing is that I think for 50, I look great.
I think so,
too. So I'm lucky that I had good genes, and I stay out of the sun. The first time I got a sunspot when I was 31, I went, no more sun.
No more sun.
So I stay out of the sun. If I have to go out, I put a ton of sunscreen on. Just because I'm Irish, I can't sun
yes.
the way other people do.
So that's why
right.
Yes.
I did when I was young because I'm dark Irish. So when I lived at the beach as a kid, I was always in the sun. But the first time I noticed a spot, I stopped. So I'm thankful that I look as good as I look because I do have friends my age that look like they could
you
be my parents.
You don't have any lines or anything that I can see.
Thank you. And I have no makeup on. So
yes,
I mean, I've got some eyeliner on, but that's I don't wear base. And I think that's part of it. That ages your skin, too. And since I have good... I went to... Not to brag, but I will for a second. I went to Savannah with a friend of mine who's a psychic medium to help her with her shows. And she wanted to get us, you know, mani-pedis and facials. So I go to get this facial in Savannah. And the facialist says, when was the last time you had a facial? And I said... 2002, I think. I had a facial, and before that, I'd never had a facial. And she said, "Why are you even here?"
Exactly.
I said, "Well, I figured I needed a facial. It's been however many years, and it was 15 years. I should get a facial." She's like, "Your skin is amazing, but I've made a lot of sacrifices in my life to have good skin, just like you were saying, right? There's a lot of drinks you never had because you had to get up at 5 a.m. There." Times you were on diets when you wanted to eat.
Right, and I could almost go downtown stark naked before I could go to sleep without taking my makeup off.
Yeah.
I mean, if I've fallen asleep with my makeup on, I feel like it's just sinking into my skin and it's probably going because of all that acne, of all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So
well,
my mother was after me every second. But that's okay. I mean, nobody grows up beautiful and says, this is it. I don't have to diet. I don't have to get my teeth straightened. I don't have to color my hair. I'm just perfect. Where are they?
Right.
Elizabeth Taylor, perhaps. But, I mean, they're so few and far between.
Right.
And it isn't all about your looks.
It shouldn't be.
And if you're a son of a gun or a mean person, that shows in your face.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Or unhappiness, unfortunately,
yes.
shows in your
yes.
face. Yeah.
Yes.
And stress.
Stress.
And I think especially as women, when we get to a certain age... If we're always worried, anxiety, stress, depression, it starts to really show in your face.
It does, and I'm beginning to feel the pressure of my travel.
Oh, I can imagine.
I'm beginning to feel hard. Yeah, I'm beginning to feel stressed. Like today, I really got so much done at home, drawers and things that I haven't looked at, pieces of paper I've put on a table and you don't pay attention to. I thought, if I just had 2 weeks, just 2 weeks to do that and kind of slough off everything you don't need.
Yeah.
You know,
I was thinking that today. I was thinking, when was the last time my house was really organized? Well, it was before I started doing 16 hours of radio a week here.
16 hours
I do? 16.
And how much prep do you have to do?
I do almost no prep.
You don't? This is all spontaneous with you?
All spontaneous.
You know today what you're going to talk about?
Nope.
Oh,
no.
That's so fabulous.
I know who I have at my daily show after this. Today I'm doing 4 hours. Yesterday I did six. I do between 2 and 6 a day.
How do you determine which is which?
Well, I always do 2 shows Monday, 2 shows Tuesday, 2 shows Wednesday, and then 1 show Thursday and 1 show Friday. But some days I have to pre-tape a show. Like we're pre-taping this for Labor Day today, post-taping this for Labor Day today.
Okay.
So there are different times when I make shows up and I do extra radio.
Wow.
It just depends. But no, I prepare nothing. I think I like the energy, Dawn, of being in the moment and in the channel and just letting what's supposed to come. I even do that when I speak. I've started speaking on behalf of the IamRaisingTheVibration.com movement, and I don't prep very much. I sort of like just letting the universe channel
well, see,
for
and
me.
That's why I'm so in tune to you, because I think you. Everybody else sounds so... I don't mean everybody else. I don't mean to be that critical, but it's so pat.
Yes.
It's so here's what, you know, and I do 1,000 radio interviews a week. I don't mean 1,000, but and you can just tell when in 30 seconds where you're going to go with it. And I am a real news junkie. Not that I mean, I want to know what's going on in the world. I mean, I am so upset with this hurricane, with what happened. I mean, how can people be blasé?
I know.
How can you not feel? What if we've had earthquakes? We haven't had anything like that.
I know.
How can you not? So the world, I feel like I'm a part of the world, is what I feel like. Not that I'm doing anything about it. But because I don't have kids and I'm not contributing anything that way.
But you are doing things about it. You do benefit things.
Oh, I do.
And you do a lot of that. And you do a lot to bring positivity to people. You go.
Well, I'm a motivational speaker where that's concerned. But you know what I'd really like to do now? I'd really like to be with babies. I was at the Children's Miracle Network for 11-12 years in Columbia, Missouri.
Okay.
And, you know, it's where I went to college, and it's a smaller town, and I really got to know so much of it, so many of the doctors and everything, and became very close to a young cystic fibrosis girl at age 14 who knew she was going to die from day one, and man, what I didn't learn from her. And she said, I'm not dying of CF. That's it. I'm not dying. So her pediatric surgeon said to her, well, they're doing heart and lung transplants, you know. She said, where? I said, Stanford. She said, I'm going. Her mother, her little pink pickup truck from a tiny little town in Missouri, drove, spent a week with me here in Los Angeles, then drove up to Stanford, went through a heart and lung transplant. I sat there in the room, in the waiting room, with her mother and father, who were divorced, who didn't speak to each other, with their only daughter going through a heart and lung transplant.
Wouldn't you just put it all aside at that point?
Oh, for God's sake. Anyway, she lasted almost 6 months. And walked outside, and then she had a rejection again. And finally, the last, I flew up every weekend I could. And finally, the last weekend, she held my hand, and she said, you know, I've tried. She said, I've done everything I can do, and it's not in my hands anymore. I said, was it ever, Missy? She said, well, we were kind of a partner, she said. We were kind of a partner.
I love that.
Oh,
yeah.
She was just wonderful. But she said, no, I think it's my time. And she took a hold of my hand, and she said, and I'm going to be your guardian angel.
Oh.
And to have somebody say that, who knows where she's going,
yeah,
who and all of that, really changed my life. It really changed.
And do you feel her around you? Did you feel her around you a lot?
I talked to her a lot. I talked to her. I say, oh, Missy, why would... But the courage. And the mother and father never spoke to each other. Their only child.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Oh, come on, get over it. However, that has nothing to do with anything except the courage of this little girl.
It's wonderful.
And that God gave you that. Now, she had an adversity from the time she was five or
right,
six.
Right, and that helps build the character.
She didn't wimp and go in a corner, though.
Right.
Some of
yeah.
us do. You know, you don't know. And the world is kind of in a bad place right now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Houston and now this Florida thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
and lots of fighting and angry.
And anger. And no,
little dictators all over the world.
Yeah.
I mean, there have always been little dictators all over the world.
But what
they
can
seem
we
to be
do about
up.
It? Just the average person. What can we do? You have your show. Your good vibrations.
You know, I
instill
just
things to people.
I always say that if the first thing I always tell people is if everybody in the world every day, Don, just got 5% kinder, the tsunami of kindness would completely change the world. And you figure, what is your day? What is 5% of your day? It's saying thank you three more times. It's asking somebody
exactly.
at the coffee shop how their day was. It's
exactly.
holding the door for somebody having trouble getting a door open. It's nothing. But just that little bit of kindness, that's the first thing that I think we as human beings really need to focus on is random acts of kindness. Just little tiny things. Are you saying thank you when they give you a receipt at the gas station? Are you sometimes thinking, I'm not in a hurry, and waving somebody in to cut in on the freeway before you? Are you?
I feel that,
you know,
so much myself. I feel that you're just saying things coming out of my mouth. And if people could understand, when you come from that point of view, your world is pleasant.
Yes. Because, you know, I have a friend who's a healer, and she always says, when you give a healing, you get a healing. And it's true. As you do something nice for somebody, that energy comes right back
Absolutely.
And slaps you right in the face, and you're covered in warmth.
Absolutely.
Every good deed you do makes you feel good.
And until you do it, you won't know it.
I don't know how people get through the day and not do it. I think you become like a junkie to it. It's the way you feel like, you know, I don't go in the sun anymore, but I do a little bit for the vitamin D when I swim. And boy, when that sun is shining down on you, there is an energy that comes out of that sun, and you feel it, and it's a high. And it's the same thing when you're nice to someone. When someone's nice to you, it's a high. How do people not want to have that high? Because it's such a low to be angry at somebody, to hold on to resentment, to lie to somebody.
And that builds.
It makes your body feel terrible. Why would you want to do that?
And I laugh at myself sometimes because I don't have kids, and I have some animals and stuff. But I had a conversation with a little bug the other day. I said, now, what are you doing in my kitchen? All right, okay, now, where do you think you belong? And I guess it wasn't the size of a ladybug. And
sure.
Yeah, we were just talking to this little bug, and I thought, well, you know, some people go, get rid of that. And I thought, well, now, should it be on a leaf? Should it be outdoors?
Sure, I do the same thing.
Should it be? And I took it outside. I said, we're all part of this little universe. I mean, it all look at a plant saying, you didn't have a drop of water and it's all my fault.
I sing to my plants. I have a thing I'm going through called Plant Parenthood. I never really was good with plants. And then people started giving them to me at my improv shows. And I thought it was my obligation to keep them alive because they were gifts given in love. And then when my mother died, I inherited hers, and she was like a total green thumb. And
oh,
I'm
she
like,
was? Oh,
I can't let mom's plants die.
Okay.
So I started taking, some are still at her house, and then a lot I brought home to my patio, the ones that needed a lot of love. And I now have, I have 6 lucky bamboos. And I have 1, 2, 3, 4. I have 6 orchids, and I have a bromeliad, and I have a sunstar plant, and they're all alive. One lucky bamboo died, and 2 I've saved from the brink because I had to learn how to have them. One died, and I literally was more sad about that than anything. I moped for 2 weeks.
Did you have to have a lot of water? Is that the key?
It's the right amount of water. It can't be too much, and it can't be not enough, and you have to figure out how much each one wants. So I go out during the day, and I tell them all how beautiful they are, and I touch their leaves, and I sing to them, and I tell them, I give them all beautiful Irish names, and I tell them all how wonderful they are. And when they blossom, I clap, and we make a big thing when they bloom, and I make a big thing to all the other ones about, oh, look who bloomed. And I'll be darned, when I got the orchids.
I'm with you.
I got two of them. 2 years ago on my birthday, and 1 lucky bamboo the year before. Those are my oldest ones. And everybody said, look, these orchids, they'll bloom a couple times, then they'll die. They might not even bloom another time. So just enjoy them, and that's it. Well, they're beautiful. One has bloomed, has just bloomed 3 times. One had never bloomed again but stayed healthy, and I just noticed that there's blooms coming up, a new branch with about 15 blooms on it. Then 1 year after I got them, Kevin Scott Allen, who was a friend of ours, bought me a beautiful purple one, and it just blooms all the time. That thing is constantly
Well, and you know, our orchids are not tough. I think it's the key of the watering system.
Or it's where the watering.
And where you can't move plants around a lot.
No, they stay where they are. As a matter of fact, I lost 2 of them, I thought, when I moved them up from my mom's. They were blooming, and I thought, well, I should bring these home. And they freaked out going from a Huntington Beach climate to a Sherman Oaks climate.
Oh, yes.
And I thought they were both going to die, and I just kept talking to them and watering them and acting like they were fine, and now, boom, big green stalks are coming up. So I really feel like these plants are my children, and the front patio is all succulents and cactus because that's where all the sun is.
And
the back patio is where the shade is. So
well, see, and that's exactly – and the same thing I do with animals. I do the same thing.
Yeah.
That little bug or this little kitten or that little thing.
I talk to the squirrels when I go to my car.
I have a wonderful
possum I see at night in the hot tub.
I had some property in Jackson Hole, and the man of my life's daughter and I are good friends. She said, I'm going to come and see you. My husband's sending me to come and see you. Okay, well, we're hiking up, and I said, I can't hike up this mountain. Here's a great big rock. I've got a book. You go hiking. So the rock is about as big as this table, and I'm lying down on the rock with a book, my purse under my head, and there's a chipmunk about 15 feet from me.
Nice.
You know, little tiny thing about the size of your hand, watching me. Well, I have a granola bar. So I'm thinking, okay, I'll put up just a little bit of. So pretty soon I've got him almost to my knee. And he's very small, smaller than this bottle, tiny little thing, you know. And I'm lying there, and I now start the trail of crumbs up my thigh. Now the crumbs are right here between my breasts, and he's right here. And I'm talking to him, and he's... And I see every single little piece of hair as it goes into his claws. You'd never be able to see a little wild animal that close. And all of a sudden, a park ranger starts up, and off he goes. He said, you're not supposed to feed the animals. I said, but he's got... His cheeks are like this. I said, he's got enough for winter. Don't tell me.
Oh, my God, that's so cute.
We had almost a fisticuffs because I fed this little animal. But I had this communication... I had a communication with this little wild animal. We are all more alike than we are different in this planet.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I think that, I don't even know. I think that we need to concentrate more. That's another thing to raise the vibration.
Yes.
Dawn, is concentrate more on our sameness.
Yes.
And less on our differences. And it doesn't mean we can't celebrate our differences because those are good.
Yes.
But we need to stop thinking of how different we all are. And
yes.
Start thinking.
Where are we really alike?
Like,
we all love our families. We all care about our health. We all
all
of that stuff. Let's go start with the core.
Right, your little friend getting the heart and lung transplant with the parents that wouldn't talk to each other.
Golly,
we need to think about. We need to come together for our daughter who is going through this big thing. Not the petty reasons we don't like each other. You need to let that go.
Yeah.
That's another thing, I think, to raise the vibration that we need to do if we're going to raise it nationally and globally, which is what I'm hoping to do with this movement a lot, is we need to start thinking of ourselves as one, thinking of the strength of us all coming together. and not everybody splintering off to their own corner and crossing their arms and spitting at each other. We need to think of...
And how do you get there, though? What you're talking about, I mean...
First thing you do is you find like-minded people that are on your page, and you work with them as a group. You start forming small pods, just like we did when humanity was new, right? We were tribal. We were little pods everywhere. Mm-hmm. You start making pods.
Like-minded,
like-hearted.
Exactly.
Like-souled. Uh-huh. You believe in the same things for the world. And it isn't about your politics and your fiscal beliefs and your sociological beliefs. It's about believing in the things we all should believe in, which is light and good and love and kindness and peace and calmness and serenity. I mean,
and
I
health.
Don't imagine that. Yeah, and good health and well wishes for others. I mean, I can't believe that anybody on any side of a political spectrum or a sociological spectrum or a class spectrum or a fiscal spectrum doesn't really want everyone to have a happier life.
Exactly. And if you're on the opposite side of it, what are you doing? You're deflecting everything.
Exactly. And if you really don't want everyone to have a happier life, then you're definitely not on my page and you're not my tribe. So you don't need to join with me.
That's right.
You can go do whatever thing you want to do for selfish reasons, for your own myopic vision. And that's great. I wish you well over there. But I'm trying to gather people that are thinking about how we can all live a better life as we each live a better life for ourselves. You know, wanting the rest of the world to live a better life doesn't mean you want to sacrifice yourself.
No, and if you're surrounded by people with like minds, you all are a whole. All of you are a better person because of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, take a quick break, then we're right back with the wonderful Dawn Wells for another hour of Raising the Vibration. If you're looking for us online, raisingthevibrationradio.com. I'm at sheenametal.com. We're at latalkradio.com. And the movement that started all, it's called I Am Raising the Vibration of the Nation and the World. We're at IamRaisingTheVibration.com. We'll take a quick break, and we're right back with you right here on LA Talk Radio with this wonderful guest talking more about how you can raise the vibration and live a happier and better life right after this.
Hello, this is Larry Russ, former keyboardist and vocalist for Iron Butterfly, and I'm here to tell you about that abuse is an epidemic in our world. Abuse has many forms: spousal and child abuse, sex and human traffic victims, and sexual abuse. Musicians Against Abuse wants to do something about it, and you can help. Contact maabuse.com. That's maabuse.com. Join me and let's do something about it. maabuse.com.
Alcohol-related harm affects us all. Everyone knows someone who's been touched. Alcohol-related harm ranges from lost jobs to serious mental and physical disease, from ruined family life to property damage, from violent crime to homelessness, death, or prison. Go to alcoholjustice.org and sign up for action alerts and e-news. Then you'll be ready to add your voice to many others when it's time to call for action that will reduce alcohol-related harm.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. So join me 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time at www.latalkradio.com on Channel 1. And let's explore All About Guitar.
When was the last time a song made a difference in your life? If you're a songwriter who would like to help the victims of the recent hurricanes, your music can make a difference. By offering one song download for just $1, you can help bring aid and hope to those in need. To find out more information and join songwriters Michelle Mangione and Grace Slick in this effort, please visit writersforthestorm.com. That's WRITERS forthestorm.com.
As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
When Debbie Fragner gave birth to Maddie, she imagined the world of possibilities.
With Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
When Debbie Fragner gave birth to Maddie, she imagined a world of possibilities. But when her daughter was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, a neurological condition that impacts a person's ability to move and maintain balance, she had to adjust her expectations. Cerebral palsy affects 1 in 323 children in the U.S. While this diagnosis may limit Maddie's physical abilities, it doesn't limit her ability to dream. Maddie is now 9 and has a dream to dance, which inspired the creation of the Children's Cerebral Palsy Movement, a nonprofit dedicated to the design and funding of innovative therapies that address not only the physical challenges of these children, but their dreams as well. As part of their Community Giving Day program, Whole Foods Market will donate 5% of net day sales to our movement on June 15th at their Tustin location and June 22nd in Newport Beach. Your purchases on these days will help further our cause. For more information, please call 714-746-4085. That's 714-746-4085.
Hi, my name is Michael Vaccaro. I have a groovy web series called Child of the 70s with some really groovy people in it, including Bruce Valanche, Jerry Jewell from The Facts of Life, Ted Lange from The Love Boat, comedian Judy Tenuta, Carolita White from Laverne and Shirley, Ann Walker from Sordid Lives, Amy Linker from Square Pegs, Gina Heck from Mork and Mindy. We have Johnny Hazard, Leo Forte, Terry Ray, Chuck Sakula, and LA Talk Radio legend Sheena Metal. I play this guy who idolizes a 1970s TV star, but then he gets a job as her personal assistant. You know how they say that you should never meet your personal idols? Well, you know, you can find us on YouTube, Funny or Die, Out TV, and you can also go to our website, www.theofficialchildofthe70s.com. It's groovy. Hey, did I say that already? Yeah, it's groovy.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
California legislator sends Bill SB 524 to Governor Brown to protect youth against institutional abuse. This bill would regulate residential programs notorious for abusing, attempting to convert LGBT youth. Let's be the change. Every child deserves to be treated with dignity and humanity. Stand with the Los Angeles LGBT Center and SEA organization against child abuse. Support SB 524. Go to PYIA.org and let your voice be heard.
Did you know that healthcare institutions provide arts programming for patients, families, and staff because of their healing benefits? Shorter hospital stays, better pain management, and less medication. Believe in the art. Go to www.mvcaf.org and click the donate button on any page. Support the Moreno Valley Cultural Arts Foundation.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio. We're at RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com, LATalkRadio.com. I'm at SheenaMetal.com and on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, everywhere at Sheena Metal. And while you're online, please visit my new movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity. It's called I Am Raising the Vibration of the Nation and the World, and we're at IAmRaisingTheVibration.com. And soon, we will be at RaisingTheVibration.org as we're working steadily right now towards our nonprofit status. And yes, Dawn, I became a minister. How about that? That's a kind of an interesting thing I did in the last week. I never thought. The wonderful Dawn Wells is here.
Oh.
Yeah, I became a deacon at American Trinity University.
How do you do that?
Took some courses, and I'm going to keep taking courses through them to get some higher degrees. I might actually go and take an online theology
degree.
I never, ever, ever wanted to be a minister, ever, and I just got suddenly the download that with this movement, the next step was to get nonprofit status and that I should become a minister. And not everybody's like, oh, great, you can marry people. Sure, I certainly will marry you. If you're out there and you want to get married, I can do that. But mostly I want to do it so I can do memorial services.
Well, that's
because
fabulous.
No one seems to know if you don't grow up, like we talked in the last hour, with a big family. Mm-hmm. And you don't grow up in one church that you've always gone to.
Mm-hmm.
When you die, no one knows what to do. And people
very, very important.
And no one wants to do a memorial service because people are like, oh, funerals are depressing. But they're really not. They're a celebration of moving on to something better.
And the joy of your life.
Yeah. And a remembrance. Yeah. They're not.
That's wonderful.
They're not depressing. They're fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, I thought my mom's was going to be, I think you were at my mom's, weren't you? Last November at the Improv. We thought that, I thought, because my mom said, look, I don't want a funeral. I don't want you to bury me in the ground. I don't want an obituary. I don't want you to throw me in the ocean. All that stuff depresses the hell out of me. Don't do it. I said, well, what do you want? And she said, I don't know. She said, keep my ashes, scatter them. I don't care. Figure it out. And it was so funny because she planned everything in her life right up till that. And she didn't
want
to plan that. She said, if I'm not in a body anymore, I don't care. I'm not going to be here. She said, so just do what you want. Throw a big party with all your friends and think good thoughts for me. So I throw big parties 4 times a year at the Improv. And I called him and said, you're going to think this is crazy, but I want to do my mom's memorial. Is that okay? And I'm going to interview people that she loved. And,
that's wonderful, Sheena.
And we're going to have a candle to celebrate her. My friend Scott Travis does my candle line, and we added our third candle in the line called Victorian Rose Garden, which was her smell, that Victorian rose smell.
Oh, yes, yes.
And a friend of mine who owns the candy factory in North Hollywood made us white chocolate angels for her, and we threw a party for her. And everyone was like, oh, and then people went home and took their candles and their candy, and they sent me pictures of their mothers holding the stuff, like, oh, I gave it to my mom.
Oh.
Here's my mom holding your mom's angel. And I mean, it was just this beautiful. That's exactly what she would have wanted.
Yeah.
That kind of celebration of life and happiness. And
how
that's what I'd like to do
that.
As a minister for other people, is be able to.
But are you younger enough to me that when I go, you could help me out?
I don't know. I'm 50.
Okay. That's right.
Do you think you'll outlive me?
No. Well, I don't know. I'm going to live to be 100. I've said that.
Okay, you might outlive me.
I don't know.
We'll see. We'll have to see. But I would be honored to do yours. Are you kidding me?
It would be magnificent, actually.
I think that it's a very important thing to say goodbye to somebody in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not goodbye. It's just. It's a different kind of hello.
Well, and I think a ceremony is important.
I do, too.
I mean, everybody has a different thing about cremation or not cremation.
I
or
agree.
A burial or not a burial.
But the ceremony can be the same no matter what you do mm-hmm. with the actual mm-hmm. body.
I just have a funny little thing because my mother and I were born the same day. And
you and your mother were born the same day?
Uh-huh, October 18th.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And of course, she knew where I was every second.
Oh, my God.
But I was her whole life. And we have a very best friend who was cared for very much. And the funeral was in Reno next to her mother, the graveyard, all of that.
That's beautiful.
And I was having the ceremony. I've always gone to funerals. That's what I've always been grown up with.
Yeah.
I myself don't want to be cremated. I don't believe in cremation.
Okay.
That's me.
Yeah.
Don't know what I'm going to do with my kitty. But anyway, so we're getting ready for the funeral. It's the same kind of funeral we always do. Well, I've got her best suit on her with her little jacket.
Sure.
And I went, oh, she needs some blush. And I said, can you get me? Somebody said, oh, don't let Dawn go in there. I said, what do you mean don't let Dawn go in there? No, don't let Dawn go in there. I said, come on. She's there. She looks adorable in her little suit. She needs a little pink on her cheeks.
Aww.
And that was what they remember most of the funeral. That you just wanted, it wasn't sad to me. It was celebrate her.
I agree.
You know, it was a celebration of as best she could look.
I
can't
agree.
Explain it.
I agree.
It sounds gross, but it really wasn't.
No, I...
But somebody was so upset that I was going to come and put some blush on her.
I think my mom honestly didn't care what happened to her when she died.
Well, that's a different thing,
so
too.
I had to figure something out. And I remember saying to her, do you want this? Do you want that? No, no, no. And I have a regular guest on my daily show here called the Sheena Metal Experience. And he is an Irish folklorist. And, you know, we were Irish.
Oh,
we're
yes.
Irish. And so he knows where the fairy gardens are. And I said, if I bring my mom out there, can we put her in a fairy garden? And then we'll go to a pub and I'll buy everybody around and we'll all toast her. And so I said to my mom, what do you think of that? And she said, well, that you can do. So that sort of graduated into this thing that I'm calling the scattering tour, where I'm basically taking her. I've done the first round, which was Kentucky.
Yes.
I'm taking her to the places in her life that she loves.
Oh, so fabulous.
Kentucky was the first, then New York. My mom was adopted into a family in Poughkeepsie from Kentucky. So it's Poughkeepsie, New York City, Long Island, where she and my dad were married. It's where she taught school and loved it. New York City, she loved. I'm going to put her in my pocket and take her to a Broadway play.
Oh,
and
God,
then New Haven, where I was born. So that's one tour. And then my mother went to college in Milwaukee. Loved it so much. It's where she met my godmother, who was her best friend, who was from Edgerton. So there's going to be a Chicago, and then we lived in Chicago when I was a kid. So there's going to be like a little Midwest tour.
Oh, okay.
And then we take her to Ireland and a little trip to Vegas, because my mother loved Vegas so much.
I love this.
That they almost retired there because she loved Vegas so much. So I have a little Ziploc bag that I put little bits of her in, and then I put it in like a little sheer bag, and I stick it in my book bag when I travel, and I travel with the certificate that I can have her, and the airlines don't give me any trouble.
Do they ask to see it?
Nobody's ever asked. No one's ever even said a word.
What do you show them that you have something?
I keep it in my book bag in case they want to see it. They give it to you when you pick up the ashes.
Okay.
But no one's ever asked to see it.
No one's ever asked to see it.
She's just in the book bag, in this little pocket, in this little bag, in this little sheath gift bag, and no one's ever said a word. I took her to... I went with my friend to go do those shows in Alabama and Montgomery, and my mom's favorite was Hank Williams Sr., and I took her to his grave.
Aww.
So she could go with me. So I take her places with me.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah, and so we're doing this whole kind of tour, and I think in retrospect, even though she never told me she wanted that when she was alive, I think she's loving the fact that I'm dropping little bits of her.
Yeah, she is.
Everywhere.
Of course she is. Of course she is, and she's... You feel her all over the country.
Oh, God. And I feel her with me all the time. And loving, I think, that my friends are going with me to do it every time it's an outing.
Yes.
Where people are meeting me.
Yes.
And people are coming with me. When I went to Kentucky, I took a friend with me.
Oh,
I was out there doing a documentary shoot. And then a bunch of my friends that live in that area met me there. And everybody, I let everybody hold her. And it's just, you know, it's kind of a... It's a thing. I think,
and I've never heard of any doing that. I just think that's fantastic.
I think for somebody who lived kind of a lonely life, as my mom did, and always wanted more of a social life. She said as she got very old, she said, I wish that you and I were the same age so I could go do all these fun things with you.
Uh-huh.
And so now she gets to have this little tour where she's on tour. And then in the end, I'm going to keep some of her, and I'm going to put some in an ash charm and carry her.
What would be the end? What would be the last trip?
Ireland.
Ireland will be the last one. Okay.
Ireland will be the end,
and then you'll put in your bracelet.
I ordered a little Celtic heart ash charm to hang here with all my other Irish
fabulous
charms that she bought me.
Fabulous.
And then in the very very end, I'm going to get a tattoo on my shoulder.
All right.
That has some Irish symbols, has her initials, and that's going to be the.
So what do you want?
I just want to be cremated. I want a huge party, and right now I don't care where someone scatters me. I have to figure that out.
Think about it this way. Would you like to be moved around like that? Maybe you'd like that too.
I don't know how many places I'd want to go. I mean, I certainly would want some of me in Connecticut and some of me in the house where my mom grew up, because my grandparents are there and she's going to be there. I'm taking her there. I mean, a lot of me different places here, Huntington Beach. I would be happy to be in the water.
Would you?
She hated the water.
Yeah.
Well, she always lived at the ocean, but my dad did Neptune, but he was a boat builder. He was a recreational boat builder, an engineer who built boats in his spare time. He loved the ocean, but she hated it.
She didn't like it.
She's like, God, don't put me in that dark water. That's the scariest thing I could imagine.
Okay, then you wouldn't do that.
But I would be happy to be, you don't have to take me out like Neptune. Just throw me in the beach, throw me off the Huntington Pier. I'd be fine.
Well, and I brought the plot next to my mother.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I bought it next to her and paid for it next to her because we're born the same day and all of that. So whoever I'm with or whoever I'm not with, I know where I'm going.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
In Reno.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, because then you know, I don't have any family or kids are going to have to make that decision.
The first place I took her online, I was out in Louisville 4 years ago to host a paranormal convention, and I found my birth grandmother's headstone. My mom didn't even know she had one. She died when my mom was 5 in a cemetery. So when I went out with my mom's ashes, I went and scattered her in front of my grandmother.
Wow.
And I think she would have loved that. And now I've just talked to the lovely lady who runs that cemetery. And I have a funny story. Funny, it'll make me cry. Story I'll tell you about that in a minute. But I asked her, if I bought a little tiny headstone for Mom, like about a quarter the size of Grandma's, mm-hmm. could we just put it next to her?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, absolutely. She said, you get it, you bring it here, and we'll put it there, and we'll do a whole thing.
Yes.
I think you find when you get into a place where you're living in love and kindness, that you just keep encountering people who live in love and kindness. And there was a time when I thought when my mother died, I would die too, because we were so close. I thought I couldn't live on the earth without her. And all I have encountered since she died were lovely souls that have really helped to nurture me through this. And it really renews your faith in humanity. And even finding my grandmother's headstone, we don't even know who bought it. The wonderful lady at the cemetery is trying to find it. But I got to the cemetery. I thought I was in the wrong place. I was like behind a liquor store.
Where are you?
And I said, St. Stephen's in Louisville.
In Louisville.
And I said, there's no way. This is a cemetery. And all of a sudden, we turned in, and there it was. And all the headstones, except my grandmother's is newer, and it's about maybe a foot and a half by a foot, but they're these little tiny rocks, and you can't even see the engraving. And I said to the lady that ran it, I said, because my mother grew up very, very poor in the Irish ghetto during the Depression, and I said, is this a poor person's cemetery? Because I'm noticing there are no mausoleums, there are no stand-up headstones, there are no... And she said, yeah, here's the story. When the Germans first came to Louisville, and they were rejected by everyone, the Irish took them under their wing and helped show them how to be immigrants. Now I'm going to cry. When the Germans became very successful and very wealthy, as Germans will, and so they bought St. Stephen's.
Oh,
so
wow.
That Irish people who couldn't afford to be buried
could be
had
there.
A place to be buried with dignity. So it was a pay what you can.
Isn't that fabulous?
And the lady who runs it now, Susan, who's lovely, she took it over because it had fallen into disarray, and she has like 30 relatives buried there. Now, I've now found my great-grandfather's headstone is there, and that about 14 of his relatives are there, and I just talked to her, and she's like, come on out next trip. But when she knew
wow.
I was there, she went. She's like, I'll be right back. And she rode off in her car. She came back, and she had like stalks of flowers and pinwheels and copper poles and had butterflies on the top. And she put them all around my grandmother's grave. And we scattered my mom in the front. And she said, there you go. There's your picture. We had to dress grandma up for the event.
Oh.
So, and you know, my mother, because my grandma died when she was 5, she had just turned 6, had this, you know, this idealization of this wonderful woman that loved and took care of her. But my mom always thought of her as a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
So to be able to take my mom back there to grandma.
Oh, gosh, yes.
You
oh,
know,
gosh,
what a wonderful
Well, and you know,
moment.
this is something that should be described. It's completing the needlepoint.
Yes.
It's completing the picture.
It absolutely is. And my mom was a needlepointer, so she will so appreciate that analogy. It is. It's
finishing
it's
the last
tying
touch.
Tying up
a
the
little
things
bit of thing
in her life, in my life.
Uh-huh.
Everything coming full circle as the way that things should. We leave too many things, Dawn, I think, in this world. We leave too many things undone, unsaid.
Unsaid
we leave relationships with people in a bad place when it would take 2 minutes just to go back and say, look, I get that we're probably not going to ever hang out again. But at one time, we loved each other in whatever way we did. So couldn't we just part in with a loving feeling towards each other? We don't have to see each other.
And I would like to at some point. Wouldn't it be nice to send out 50 of those notes?
Yeah.
Just a little saying, this is not a Merry Christmas. This is the middle of March.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing my life in the 50s.
Yeah.
Or thank you for sharing, I remember the time you gave me a ride or whatever. Wouldn't it be nice if randomness of kindness, what's that thing?
Yeah.
Random acts of kindness.
Yeah.
That would make a difference if somebody said that. Sheena, you know what you did for me the other day? When you said that thing on the radio, it made me feel from head to toe like I was released from whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And I get that all the time.
I bet
you do.
That's
why I do what I can to give back to people. And
yes.
It's why I throw the improv shows and make sure when I broadcast my daily show live from the improv, and make sure there's never a charge for it, because it should be for people to come as my way to say
and
thank you.
And do they know
you.
That?
Oh, yeah.
They do.
Well, you know, because you're on my mailing list. Every year when that show turns another year old, or when my radio career turns another year old, I always send a letter out to everybody who's ever been on my shows and say, thank you. It's this. I'm here because of you. The energy you put into this is why I'm here. This is all because of you. Mm-hmm. Because it is. Because I couldn't have the career that I've had alone. And I couldn't have had the show that I have alone. And I couldn't have done it without LA Talk Radio and other places I've worked. I couldn't have done it without each guest and everybody who listened. Everything in life is a group effort. And we need to think about it more. Like I was saying before the break, how we need to think more of the power that we have when we come together. We need to think of everything in our life as a group effort.
That's interesting.
You know, you have a kid, it's yours, it's your partner's, It's the siblings help, the aunts, the uncles, the grandparents, the teachers, the dance teacher, the Girl Scout leader, whatever, all of those things
make
influence
person.
A life. And your life as an adult is influenced by, like you said, the person who gave you the ride in the 50s or the girl that you helped that had cystic fibrosis, you know, somebody that you worked in a play with or on a TV show with that really lightened your load every time you saw them. I mean, it's all about that. I think sometimes people think that giving back is this big, difficult thing that it's going to, oh, my whole life's going to be compromised. And they think of the idea of being in service as you're constantly digging ditches in the heat.
And do they have any idea the feeling it is when you've done something?
I know.
It makes such a difference.
Yeah, just to say thank you, just to point people out and say, you know what, just when I was at my friend's birthday party on Sunday, her mother had her by herself. She chose not to get married. And she was lucky that she lived at the time with her mother and her grandmother. So when my best friend was born, there were four women in the house and there was a tribe. And she said, we were talking about, you know, another friend of hers was there talking about the people in their life that have offered to become the guardians of their sons if anything ever happened to them. And my friend's mother was talking about how she just figured her mom and her grandma because nobody else was offering. And I said, well, my mom didn't even have that. And she basically had nobody. Even the woman that I call my godmother, who was my mother's best friend, whom I loved, at the time when my mom asked her to be my godmother, she said, I don't want the responsibility. So I never had a godmother, father, guardian, anything. And I said to my mom once, well, what was your backup plan? And she's like, just every night I said to God, don't let me die till she's 18. That was the backup plan. Nothing can happen to me till she turns 18. So I said to my friend yesterday, without even thinking, she said, we haven't even thought about it, and I don't know what we would do. And I just looked at her and said, you know, if anything ever happened to you, I would raise her. And it kind of came out of my mouth. I'd never thought about it before. And then it came out, and I thought, oh, and I thought, you know, but you know what? If anything ever happened to her and her husband, I would raise her. I absolutely would. I said, I don't know what kind of a weird Auntie Mame kind of mom I'd make. I don't know if she'd like it. And she said, she'd probably like to come live with you now for a while. And I'm like, well, she's welcome anytime she wants to come.
Isn't that nice to know?
But it's a responsibility that it's effortless and you don't even think about it. When there are people in your life that you love,
yes,
you take care of them.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
It's like people with their, my dog's sick, so I had it put to sleep. Whoa.
Oh, my God.
There's this responsibility. You take on another life to take care of it, a cat, a dog, a bird. That's your child.
And if you don't accept that responsibility, let somebody else take the animal. I have a hard time with that.
I have a hard time with that.
Anything living. Anything living.
People who move and leave their animals behind. I have a really hard time with that. It's so easy just to not be that person.
Yes.
And that's what I hope people are getting from IamRaisingTheVibration.com. It's so easy just to be a person that thinks in the other direction.
And so much comes back to you when you do.
Yeah.
You're giving a quarter and three quarter comes back.
Right. And it's sort of like, you know, there's a lot of concerns with a faction of our country, and I'll only speak about our country because I've never lived in another country. Politically right now, that if we give others rights, it's taking our rights away, which is ridiculous. Giving other people rights
just make more rights.
Doesn't take your rights away. Well, along the same lines, doing things for other people doesn't take anything away from you.
Not a thing.
It actually adds to your life because the more people that are happy and their vibrations are higher, the better the quality of your life
of everything is.
But I think we have this sort of, you know, animal self, this monkey self that's very worried about what's mine.
Exactly. Competition.
Although it's really an insult to monkeys because they share much better.
They do.
But, you know, it's just
how are you? I mean, this is a whole political thing which we don't even need to get into. But I'm just saying, how do you feel about this testing these bombs over here?
Oh, it's terrifying.
I mean, don't you think we're on the brink?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's terrifying.
Yeah. How do you go about it? How do we go about it? How do I go about it at my age? Totally different than if you're 22. Totally different than if you're 40.
Right.
You know, where are we with this? I think we're in danger right this moment.
I think we're in danger from North Korea.
Yes.
I think
yes.
we're in danger from Russia. And I think we may be in danger from China. I think we need to keep an eye in all those directions. Different kinds of danger with all three of them.
But I think North Korea is something that would happen instantly.
I agree. I think that...
And I don't know that we're aren't blasé.
Well, and I think that it's interesting that at a time where we have a leader who's never been a leader before, suddenly this guy has decided this is his time to make his move. I think a lot of people in the world perceive our country as weaker right now.
I do too.
And so they think, oh, well, then, you know, when
it's
when,
arm wrestling.
When you're weak, that's when the bullies rise, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, now's our time to go get that country because I know what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
the bully says, come ahead.
Right.
You know, so then we, you know, it's like two little kids in the parking lot.
And that was my worry about him from the beginning was, is he presidential? Does he know what he's doing? And people would say to me, well, but, you know, this one and that one and this one. And I would say, yeah, but yada, yada, yada. Does this one know what he's doing? That's fundamentally my concern.
Well, and
him.
A businessman is very different than running the world.
Right.
So
somebody who's never held an office shouldn't hold the highest office in the country. Because holding an office, even if you're just on a school board or you're on city council, it's a whole different thing than just having a company.
Well, and if you're arm wrestling because you're a corporate blah, 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 and you know, my car's bigger than your car, blah, 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 that's one thing. This is not just you. And there's compromise is what the world needs.
Yeah.
It has to be the right kind of compromise. I'm not saying that. But you can't arm wrestle with everybody today. One little press of the wrong button is going to change everything.
Right. Yeah. And I also think that he ran a campaign that was sort of like a schoolyard bully would run.
Yes.
And I think there are people in our country that it awakened a sleeper cell of bullying in them. And they now think it's okay to bully people. And it's not just people on the right, and it's not just people that voted for him.
No.
It's just certain people resonated with his, oh, yeah, 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 F you, America kind of attitude.
Uh-huh.
And I think him reinforcing the whole Make America Great Again and talking constantly in his campaign about all the things that were bad about America has made a lot of people who are easily influenced think, what, is this country isn't that great? And, you know, and that's just, there's nothing good that can come from believing your country sucks. I mean, is it a work in progress? Does it need help? Are there ways where it needs to get better and stronger? Well, yeah, that's the story with anything.
Of course.
But to constantly be fixating on everything you don't like about it just reinforces a negativity that I think in the last almost 10 months we've seen that really played out.
And in the forefront of everything.
Yeah. And we're seeing
and
more.
When you've got the temperament of North Korea, it's explosive.
Yeah.
It isn't, let's step back and analyze what's going on.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be something, both people, a little bit of temperament. I'll show you, bully to bully.
Well, he's been talking for years, right, about, and his father too, about setting off those bombs and building those bombs. I mean, he's been, you say one thing for him, he's been very open.
Very upfront.
About the fact that those bombs existed and that he was constantly working on them. And his little parades that he throws with his tanks, and I mean, he really
the discipline too. When them march, how long does it take to make sure your feet are only up 6 inches
or whatever? Well, and Putin has the same ones for Russia, the same, and Trump wanted one. Remember, they wouldn't let him have one.
Yeah,
he wanted the same kind of inauguration with the. It's a strange.
Well, we're back to Napoleon. I mean, we're right back to it's very
frightening. A bunch of little boys playing army men.
Yeah, but now they've got the cap guns. Now they've got rifles.
Right, and nukes.
And nukes.
Yeah,
you know. I mean,
I don't see that somebody as crazy as I think that Kim Jong Un is. I don't see that he's going to blow up the world because I think. Hopefully, he's smart enough to know that
retaliation.
If you send
right
a
there.
Nuke off, well, not only that, but if you send a nuke off anywhere in the world. It's gonna come back at you. It's gonna destroy your environment as well. I mean, just putting that much toxicity into the planet is gonna hurt everywhere else on the planet. You know,
you think he thinks that far away?
I think that inside of every narcissistic dictator, there is a concern for their self. I think their concern of self is a huge concern.
Yes,
how will
this
impact me? How will that impact me? How is this gonna make me feel? And we have to know. Just, I mean, look at that the Fukushima nuclear leak. I mean, that wasn't even a bomb. That was just a plant meltdown. And they say that the parts of the ocean that it's damaged, just from the little bit of time it leaked out into the water before they contained it. We're talking about a big old bomb going off. I mean, I don't even know why he's testing them so close to home.
But he's going to win. He's going to wipe out California.
He's going to wipe out the whole world. Yeah.
I don't think we realize what we're really playing with fire, pardon the expression. We really
I think he also has to know that by the time we see that bomb coming towards us, we will have sent 10 to him. So it will be ultimate suicide. He's going to have to be ready to go. And he doesn't seem like he's ready to go. I think there's going to be more taunting and threatening, mm-hmm. and I wish we had a president that would get in his grill and scare the hell out of him. I wish we had one that would back Putin down. I think that Putin's very scary, and our president seems to be like Putin's friend. I'm very, very worried about that. It's very, and this, it's all these countries that feel odd and like trouble are the ones that have all dropped out of NATO. They're the ones
That's
saying,
right.
We're not going to play with you all anymore. We're going to go do our own crazy thing on our own.
Yes.
And if they got together, right? If China and Iran and Korea and Russia got together
we would
have World War III on our hands.
Yes, we would.
And it would be every bit as scary, if not more, as when it was Germany and Japan and Italy.
That's right. That's right. And now everything's too sensitive. It's all over in a press
right.
of a button.
Now it's all pressing buttons.
It's not going to war in a field with rifles.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's quite scary. And then when you're looking at kids that are saying, well, there's not going to be any tomorrow. You know, what is the world feel
like? That is
like?
Scary, too.
It is.
Yeah. It's and also just a sense of, you know, I was telling this story yesterday on my daily show that one of my other best friends who lives in Huntington Beach, interestingly enough, who I did not grow up with, but still lives in my hometown. I have dinner every Friday with her family, and they're just really cool Irish folks from Massachusetts. And her son is 26, and he went to a private university in Washington, D.C., a liberal arts school. And I was having a discussion with one of his friends the other night who was in town. And it's a lot of like, yeah, this country sucks, and this country's a bully, and this country hates everybody, and, oh, America, we do everything wrong. And I thought, is that really what that generation thinks? Because, look, have we meddled where we didn't belong? Have we done
hasn't everybody
big,
always?
Dumb things? Certainly we have. But, I mean, our country, throughout its history, has, like, saved everybody's ass that needed help in the world at the detriment to
us. People
in our country are starving, and we're dropping food over other countries because their problem at the time is bigger than ours.
Yes. Yes.
So to turn around and just talk about, oh, this country's rotten, and that makes me really sad because, look, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I'm a lifelong liberal. I'm probably now left of center because the parties have moved. But I love this country.
But I think as of Americans, whatever party you are, as of Americans,
yes.
we are a class above. We have been givers. We have been caring through all of our history. Haven't been treated everybody the way we should all along. But we're aware
but
our
no
conscience
country
is
has.
There.
Yeah, I love when people go, oh, but you know, like England. I'm like, oh my God, England at one point, Imperial England, they owned everything.
Yes.
They took everything over they wanted and made it their own. Africa, India, our country, they didn't care. They just took everything. Now they're a wonderful intellectual thinking country, but they didn't used to be. They sort of got their butt kicked and gave everybody their stuff back. But people don't think about that. I think a lot of people don't read history books. They don't think about what happened before them. They only think about what happened now.
And now everything is so quick.
Right.
You know,
what just happened on Twitter the last 10 minutes is what people are thinking about.
Yes, yes. And what can you do about that? Because it's instant. Somebody's going to press a button or somebody's going to do something. We didn't have to get the cavalry all together and march over to Nevada
right,
and say, I'm
right.
taking Las Vegas over.
Right, exactly.
No, you know.
Exactly, right. We didn't have to go through the Donner
Pass party.
On horseback.
Do you know, I was going to revert. My grandmother was held up by Black Bart.
Really?
My grandmother, Angel's Camp, Avery's, was my grandmother's family, my father's mother, and there were five or six girls, and Black Bart came in and tied them all up and put them in the basement.
Oh, my God.
Took all of their food. By the time they got out and undid themselves, he'd left a $50 gold piece on the table.
Wow.
So he was a gentleman instead of a thief.
I love that. I had a Black Bart doll when I was a child.
You
they
did?
Had these dolls when I was a kid called Wild Wild West.
Oh,
and
yes.
they were big plastic dolls, and they came with the horses and the corrals.
Black Bart was
And Black Bart was, there was a Black Bart doll. I probably still have it in the attic. It's probably still in Mom's attic.
Oh, isn't that something?
I have to find it. I'll take pictures of them for Instagram.
And my great-grandfather on my mother's side drove stagecoach to Virginia City during the gold rush.
Wow.
So, I mean, I'm a real Western person. I can really go back, you know, if you're
yeah,
in the
she
South,
was too.
You go back so many generations.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
She was all about the West and about the natives. She had a big...
I wanted to be an Indian. So
yeah.
tell me, please, there was a chief or a squaw or something in my life. I wanted to be Pocahontas.
But now, do you believe in past lives?
I don't know.
It might be there.
I don't know.
Might very well be there.
Because I really identify with all that. And so we've treated them so awful. I did a movie up in Montana, and that reservation and stuff was I could hardly stand it. I said, what are we doing?
I know. The California reservations are in such...
You give them a desert with nothing there and say, here, I know, take care of yourself.
But here, there, the natives here have really come up with the casinos and the...
Yep, well, they got that passed, didn't they?
They've really...
Thank goodness.
I have a friend from Montana. We went to the Pechanga reservation, and she was like, this is a Native American casino? And I'm like, I know, right? It's beautiful. Uh-huh. She's like, this is not what it's like in Montana.
Oh, no?
No, the reservations are not fancy.
No. I did a movie up there. Yeah. I mean, the poverty just blew my mind.
Me too.
In this day and age.
Well, and the native folks are like, they're homeless people, right? They sort of sit around on the streets, and that makes me so sad because they were a
and
people
it's their
with
land.
Such dignity. I know.
You know, another thing that gets me is I drive across Las Vegas or Nevada or whatever, and I'm thinking, what women in Boston, in North Carolina, got on a covered wagon and said, I found this cowboy and I'm going west.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're genteel and you're going to make this trip. So obviously you thought something was worthwhile. Do you have your babies in the middle of the desert on a buckboard?
Yeah.
When you hit the Sierra Nevada mountains, do you say, we're going to go over this. What's on the other side? You know what was on the other side?
Yeah.
We didn't have all the electronics.
Well, they thought it just dumped into the ocean. They thought once you got over those mountains, they thought Utah was the ocean.
And when you get right now, I just came back from the Cowboy Festival in Utah through that beautiful Red Rock Canyon.
Oh,
you'd say, I would stay here, and I see Cochise definitely on that ridge because I can see him with his horses. But here's a little woman going through Nebraska having a baby in this buckboard.
Yeah.
What would make her say, let's go see what's there? The courage. They say Western women are the strongest genetically when you go back to it. And I kind of see that. You'd have to be to survive that to get this far.
I agree.
There's no rivers. There's mountains. There's snakes. It's very different than going through the mountains of Virginia or Atlanta.
But don't you think that as a species, we were more focused when we had to concentrate on our survival? We had a lot less time to be bored
and
get into trouble when every day was about, am I going to eat today? Are the elements going to kill me today? Is my family going to stay alive today?
And I have to compromise and I have to, we all have to do this
together. We all have to stay alive. Uh-huh. Now that we've become sort of a first world country and we're so spoiled in this technological world, now we can sit around and think of things we don't like.
You're
it's like, how about just liking that we're alive? How about liking that you survived?
And grateful that what we have accomplished at all.
That you have clothes and shelter and air conditioning and food and a car. And how about being just thankful for all of that?
No question.
But
we get so into ourselves.
Yeah.
And competition and greed.
But yet a hurricane happens, like Harvey.
Oh, my God.
And suddenly we all pull together.
And what's happening in Florida?
And then and
I'm cleaning my closets
together.
Tomorrow and sending another box.
Or a 9/11 happens and we all pull together. Uh-huh. Or the Northridge earthquake happened here and we all pull together. Uh-huh. We're wonderful in times of crisis with each other.
You suppose God is telling us that?
We're horrible. I absolutely think God is telling us that. We're horrible when we have nothing to do but sit around and think about how bored we are.
That's right. What that dress cost, or who got the new car.
Yeah. Or, did he win the Emmy? I hate him.
That movie star stuff just gets me.
I know.
You know, the young people that I'm making up names, like the Miley Cyrus and the Taylor Swifts and all that. They're and I'm not criticizing anybody because I don't know them that well. But that generation is, it's handed to them quite easily.
Yes.
They haven't had to work for much, and the press has made their careers more than necessarily their talent or their work. Nothing wrong with that, but it's we're so kind of tied to publicity, I guess. Maybe that's what it is.
It's true. Well, and just looking for ways to make ourselves not bored because there's nothing real to worry about.
And don't you feel good when you've accomplished something? Like today,
God,
I got up and I've had a dining room table full of stuff. I went, I have got to go through this. By the time I finished it, I felt I could have created a new nation.
Yeah.
I felt so proud of myself that I got all this done.
Uh-huh.
That you put everything off, that just the little necessities.
I feel that way, too. Every day I get up and get in the pool, I think, I made time to exercise as busy as I am today.
Oh, talk to me more about that.
And then I feel good.
Yeah.
And I feel renewed. Every time I come out of that water, I feel like I've been baptized.
Now I need to have a partner to do it with. See, that's my excuse.
The most magic things happen to me in the water. Well, call me. I will come over and swim with you.
Yes.
I will come over and swim with anybody. I just
and I don't really
excuses.
Swim as much as water aerobics. I love the water
aerobics.
All
right. Aerobics. That's fine. Yes. I'll do anything you want to do.
We're not very far apart, are we?
No. 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
No. I've played poker at your house. We've already done, we've done indulgent things together. We can do exercise
We
together.
Ought to try to get rid of the indulgence and bounce around in the water a little bit. We ought to have a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday class or a Tuesday, Thursday class at a certain time. Tuesdays and Thursdays are better for me because I'm always on the road.
Okay.
Or Tuesdays and Thursdays or Mondays and Thursdays.
You're on the road every week?
Oh, just about. That's I'm going hard, to Baltimore honey. And then I'm going to somewhere else and then it's 2 days to pack and then regroup. But I think they're in the middle of the week. We could do a Tuesday and Thursday class.
Let me know. You tell me when you're in town and we'll make plans.
What's the day today?
Thursday. So today's out. No Thursday class this
week. How about Tuesday?
Tuesday's good.
Let's make a mark.
Okay, but I thought you were leaving town on the 10th.
I probably leaving town.
Is this one of those things, Dawn, where I show up at the pool and then you're not even in the state?
Where is she?
I know this game. Come over and come to my house and swim. Wink, wink, wink. Is that what this is?
How did that get in the bottom of my...
You put it in there.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh.
Or we've got a poltergeist in here.
Or we've got a worm. Okay, I got to look at my... Wait a minute. Talk to me because I've got this magical thing that's called a cell phone.
Okay, so I hardly ever go out of town. I'm the opposite of you. I've practically got roots that grow into the ground in Los Angeles. I went out of town 2 weeks in April and almost 2 weeks in July. And I have to tell you, and then I did a play here for the Hollywood Fringe in June. Rehearsing in May. So I feel like 4 months of my life, nothing got done.
Exactly.
Because I was always at a theater. I was at somebody's house rehearsing. I was out of town. I kind of came home and I'm like, I mean, I remembered to pay bills and I remembered to pack everything for the trips. And I remembered to feed the cat. I came home and I thought, nothing is done.
Exactly.
Like the dry cleaning isn't done.
That's why I was so excited. I cleared off a table today. I went, oh my God, look at this. How long has this been here?
I literally had 16,000 emails in my inbox that I'm very proud now I have down to like 1,300. I'm under 1,500 between all my folders.
You have to do this with what you do, but I just couldn't live with this computer. My manager just goes crazy with me. Well, look it up. I said, I don't want to look it up. Tell me what it is. I'll put it on the calendar.
Oh, you're off. Yeah. You have a manager, though. Aren't you lucky?
Well, no. Oh. No, it's like living with the Gestapo. What did you do today, Don? I don't know. Well, I told you you're supposed to... We had a big to-do whether he was going to drop me off here or I was going to come by myself.
Yeah, I know. And he wound up dropping you off.
Yeah, and he wasn't happy with it. Oh. But I said, that's the way it goes.
Okay. You're the manager. You drive. Are you trying to figure out when you're in town next while we're on
that's
the air?
That's why I'm trying to figure this out.
And I may be going... I was supposed to go out of town again the end of August, and I think I may be going out of town again the end of this month. This time to Montana. Yeah, it was supposed to be the end of August. Now it's September. So I'm thinking maybe it's going to be the end of September.
I have nothing written in here.
Oh.
And I know, and I'm leaving town.
I swear he told me you were here till the 10th, which is why you're here today. Huh. I don't know. Anyway, where can people find you online, my friend? And thank you for being here today. It means so much.
How do you find me online? Yeah. DawnWells.com?
I love it.
DawnWells.com.
If that's where we find you, that's good. And you're on Twitter? You're on Facebook?
Uh-huh. I'm all of that.
Good. Go to those places and find the wonderful Dawn Wells. And if you need help, you can also find me through RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com, through LATalkRadio.com, through SheenaMetal.com. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, social media, at Sheena Metal everywhere. And, of course, the movement that started all, why we have the show. I am raising the vibration of the nation and the world, and we're at IamRaisingTheVibration.com. Until we see you next week, always be kind. Always love those around you. Think of ways to bring joy and light and positivity into the world. Always ask, what can I do to make the world a better place? And constantly be thinking of ways to raise your vibration. I'm honored that you listened today, and you're the best listening audience in the world. I'll see you next Monday night, 7 to 9 p.m., right here on LA Talk Radio. I love you all. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.